It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It has finally happened. 1 year and 9 months after the October 2013 ribbon cutting, Iowa's new penitentiary is now housing its first inmates. It was on the first of this month that more than 500 of Iowa's most dangerous offenders were transferred to the new $175 million state maximum security prison in Fort Madison. This hour, we want to get to know the new prison. Also, revisit the old later in the program. We'll listen back to highlights from my day-long visit to the old penitentiary back in 2012. But first, let's get a picture of the new prison from Bill Petrosky, public affairs reporter for the Des Moines Register. And Bill, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. You've been covering this long and bumpy road to the new prison, including a road pockmarked by a series of construction problems, problems with a geothermal heating and cooling system, and then finally, to top it off, a failure of a system designed to remove smoke in the event of a fire. We can talk about that a little bit later, the bumpy road there.
Sure.
But remind us of the origins of this new prison. Why was a new facility deemed necessary?
Well, this really happened back. There's actually been three governors who have been involved with this prison. There were two dangerous inmates who escaped back in 2005, and it was really an extraordinary thing. They went and made a handmade rope out of some stuff from the prison upholstery shop, and kind of made a grappling hook and shimmied across from the old death row cell house onto the top of a 30-foot limestone wall, got their way down and escaped. And there, I think one was arrested in Missouri and another one was arrested in Illinois, and it became a big national story and a big national controversy. And then on top of that, the fact of the matter was they escaped right in front of what had been a prison guard tower, and that prison guard tower was unoccupied because of budget cuts. So it was a huge controversy, and a lot of people have been saying for years and years that the Fort Madison prison needed to be replaced, but that really kind of prompted things to happen.
And we have to remember, too, that parts of this facility, original structure here, predates the state of Iowa.
That's exactly right. Back to you can actually go, as I know you've been down there, Ben, and as you enter the facility, you're actually in the old facility that dates to 1839, back when Iowa was a territory. So we're talking about a correctional facility that is certainly one of the oldest in the country and one of the oldest west of the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I said some of Iowa's most dangerous offenders. Tell us more. What does it take to get you a room at the Iowa State Penitentiary?
At the old Iowa State Penitentiary and the new one. Well, essentially, this is the place where you're going to find most of the people who are, or many, many of them, who are serving life sentences. In other words, you're convicted of first-degree murder, first-degree rape or sexual assault, first-degree kidnapping. I always say that you can, as you walk down the cell through the cell houses in the old state penitentiary, you could look at the names and it would be almost like a roster of many of the most serious crimes that you've seen probably over the past 15, 20 years. In fact, they still have an inmate there. I believe Jack Nutter, I think, is still alive, who I think has been there since, I believe, the late 1950s. So, yeah, it's a remarkable place.
Since we're talking about offenders that have been there a long time, my visit there 3 years ago, I stepped into the cell of a long time, a lifer, as they say, Lacey Kelly, mm-hmm. Serving a life sentence for a murder conviction. He spent more than 40 years behind bars.
Right.
And at that time, I talked with him. He was quite nervous about what was happening in moving. He had a cell to himself in the old facility. I talked with him about the impending move, where many offenders will have to share a cell for the first time, and here's what he had to say.
My first concern, basically, right off, was the double cells, living with another individual. I got 42 years in, and I've been by myself, and I'm not ready to do that with nobody else. Now, if you guys have already experienced this from going to other institutions and stuff, I haven't, you know, and I know what I can tolerate, and I'm doing good just dealing with myself, let alone somebody else in tight quarters like this. No, it won't work.
Oh, do you understand that the double bunking would be in a cell similar to this size.
Exactly the same size.
Exactly the same size. So we've got 6 foot wide by 8 or 9 feet long and maybe 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
Something
and
like that.
And then they'll double bunk it.
They'll double bunk it, and the man on the top bunk will be right up against the ceiling.
Right.
But, you know, there are budget cuts everywhere. The state says this has to happen.
Yeah.
They design this new facility. You say you will not be in a double bunking situation?
No, what I hear, you know, policies changes by the weeks, right? Right now, as it is, they said kitchen and shop workers, they will double bunk because they want to have them all in one unit and they'll go up, come out. But anybody who is doing life or more or a large number doesn't want to double bunk, they'll get a single cell. They'd rather do it that way than have the trouble, you know, because I've seen the trouble they can have with that double bunk, and it's not worth it.
For instance, what kind of specific troubles?
I mean, you're forever having fights, you know, because people get irritable, you know what I mean? It gets hot, and in the places, other places I've been, and there's no air conditioning, and you're in there 24-7 with somebody, a roommate, don't take long.
Right.
At each other's throat, you know.
Lacey Kelly there. I was speaking with him in 2012, visiting his cell at the old Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison. And Bill Petrosky, public affairs reporter for the Des Moines Register, if you just joined us, he's talking with me, has covered for many years the correctional system we have here in Iowa, now the latest chapter, the new penitentiary in Fort Madison. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. So there we heard from a lifer serving a life sentence for a murder conviction, Bill. On August 1st, that was the big day for the transfer, the Department of Corrections here in Iowa, keeping that a secret until it was underway. Describe the transfer of more than 500 of Iowa's most dangerous offenders. In your article about it, you said officials said more than 2 years of planning were involved in orchestrating one of the largest tactical presences that will likely ever be seen in southeast Iowa. This was a huge deal.
Oh, absolutely. Right. You're talking about just a massive security force. They had 215 security people. This included state troopers, correctional officers from six state prisons, Fort Madison police, Lee County sheriff's deputies. They had DNR people patrolling the Mississippi River. If you're familiar with the situation down, the layout down there at the old state prison, it's right there on the banks of the Mississippi River. They actually had DNR officers in the river, making sure that nobody was interfering there, or you know, would run up a boat to try to help somebody escape. They had security staff from the BNSF railway. The BNSF railway runs right by there, making sure there was no interference. And as I understand it, I think they also had some Illinois state police or correctional officials or something like that, just to make sure nobody like tried to run across the bridge. They're right there on the border of Illinois. So this is really a remarkable security situation. They just wanted to make sure that nothing went wrong. And I talked with a state legislator, and he kind of joked, Tom Courtney, that that day probably would have been a good day to go out and go speeding on Iowa's state highways, because there probably weren't very many state troopers on the state highways, because a lot of them were down there in southeast Iowa and Fort Madison.
Even higher tension, I understand, because in early July there was an escape by a dangerous convict. This is before the transfer.
Yes, that's right.
Almost a month before the transfer, a dangerous convict increased some tension there. We've had some prison escapes here in Iowa, also in the news. So that was heightened tension. But as far as you know, the transfer without a hitch?
Well, it wasn't without a total hitch. Remarkably, I've heard this from a real good source, that there were three inmates who actually refused to go. And this kind of goes back to this thing with Lacey Kelly, where you know, many inmates were really pretty hesitant about the situation. There were three inmates who refused to go, and they just put them in restraints and wheeled them away, and they went. Because that's just the way that they were going to do it. There wasn't going to be any question about who was in control there, and the correctional officers took control of the situation. So it did, you know, they went, and there was no further problem there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the new facility, compare it with the old. Bill Petrosky with us of the Des Moines Register. Now, On my visit in 2012, I spoke with Rich Barlow. He's a correctional counselor working at the penitentiary, or at least he did in 2012. There's a lot of historical knowledge on the facility. And here he is in conversation with him, talking him about some of the needs that were not being met by the old facility.
Yeah, when you're dealing with a 172-year-old facility, obviously the maintenance costs are very, very high. And I think that's a primary concern of one of the reasons why we needed a new facility. We had an escape from inside the walls in 2005. So obviously security concerns remain. Staffing is, not up to what our standards should be. Again, and we're working on that, but there are just a number of factors that are involved.
Mm-hmm. Rich Barlow there, correctional counselor at Fort Madison's a penitentiary. By the way, there, Bill Petrosky, this is Rich on his second day of work back, I believe, in the early 1980s at the penitentiary. This is when we had a prison riot, and he was taken hostage for several hours.
I remember that.
Yeah. Let's listen to, before I get your comment, Bill, because I know you visited the new facility, so you've got a great vantage point for us to compare the two facilities. So let's listen to Warden Nick Ludwick, longtime warden, comparing the architecture and structure of the old and new Fort Madison penitentiaries.
It's indicative of the construction of the era. Case in point, new facilities. Our new facility, for instance, is built, and it has a sprawl, looks more like a college campus, if you will. The construction of this era and the construction of the early 1900s was to stack cell blocks. You went up instead of out. So the older facilities will be very similar in nature, whether it's the peaks on the exterior.
Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Whether it's the peaks on the exterior, the stone facade, and or the level system. Many facilities resemble the 3-, 4-, 5-story concept.
Mm-hmm. Why isn't this cell house used anymore?
Because of the age, the infrastructure. Again, as you get inside, our cell house row, as we call it, is very impressive. You look at it and you think, wow, you know, this is great. This is very usable. The infrastructure, your electricity, your plumbing, everything it takes, you know, your heating, your ventilation is very expensive when you have a structure as dated as the Iowa State Penitentiary. This is a perfect example of that.
Okay, Warden Nick Ludwick, in conversation with me in 2012 during my visit to the old Iowa State Penitentiary. You visited it, Bill Petrosky, a few months ago. What struck you most when visiting the new facility in terms of design, operation, the feel of the new facility? We heard the warden use the the descriptor college campus-like, huh?
That's absolutely right. I mean, we're talking about the difference between night and day between the old prison and the new prison. This is a brand-new facility. It's a campus-like setting. It has low-slung buildings. There's lots of natural lighting. There's energy efficient. I don't know if you remember former University of Iowa football coach Hayden Fry.
He painted
the locker room, visitors' locker room, pink. And they've done kind of the same thing there. The interiors of the new cell houses are painted in soft hues of yellow and green and other pastel-like colors. In fact, Warden Ludwig, he had told me, he said, you know, the idea here is calming effect in terms of management of the offender population. And there's a lot of sunlight in the cell houses. The idea is that you're going to brighten the mood of the inmates. Many of them have been diagnosed with psychiatric illnesses. And one other thing that's really unique about this is that the new layout will allow offenders to see the distant horizon of the sky, which they which they couldn't observe in the old facility because the place was surrounded by 30-foot-high stone walls. You were right on the edge of downtown Fort Madison there, but they couldn't see downtown Fort Madison there.
Some may say, well, why would that matter? And for sure, why would that matter for someone being punished for a heinous crime?
Right. Well, I think the part of the thing here is that a lot of these people are serving life sentences, but not all of them. Quite a few of these folks will, in fact, eventually get out. And part of it is just the fact that a lot of these people have very serious mental health issues, and it's going to be better to manage them if they're sane than if they're having serious psychiatric issues.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, a prison is there, so the main function of a prison is not to let inmates, offenders, escape here. But
right.
I wonder if you can talk, and you've just touched on it, the calming
right.
effect of these paints, about what other operational criteria need to be met by a prison that this new prison will be a great improvement over the old one in.
Well, if you've been in the old facility, you know, for example, the prison industries there, that was about as antiquated a facility as you'll ever see it. You know, it was very, very, very old and nothing modern about it. They're going to have a furniture factory at the new place, and they're going to have a program that builds houses for low-income people, both of which had operated at the old facility, but these will be new ones. So there'll be medical unit, a mental health facility, space for education programs, including adult basic education. They're going to have substance abuse treatment. There's a non-denominational place for worship. And, of course, like any other prison, they've got recreation with weightlifting, basketball, and that type of thing. One thing that's kind of unique is that there are two dining halls in the new facility, and there's small slots through the wall where they hand out the meals, and part of this is to avoid confrontations between gang members and inmates who have other disagreements, which is a pretty interesting thing. They've thought through many of these things. When you build a facility new, you're able to address those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And in talking with Warden Ludwig, the design of this prison is so vastly different that you
right.
can oversee and guarantee the security of the offenders with fewer people.
Right.
And so you can have the same level of security and do it much more efficiently. I wonder if you had any insight as to how this changes. We've talked about the offenders, but what about the staff experience, the correctional officers? How does it change this new work environment, the work of the staff and corrections officers?
Well, one thing is, you know, there's over 300 security cameras, I think maybe even close to 400 security cameras in this place. You're going to have correctional officers with much better line of sight. The correctional officers, there will be somebody in a spot where they can pretty much overlook the entire facility, as opposed to, you know, needing to walk through the facility and look in the individual cells in terms of everything that's happening. I'm sure they will still be regularly doing that, but it's going to operate in a much more efficient manner. And as you're probably aware, there's always hazards to people working in correctional facilities, inmates, you know, throwing bodily fluids and that type of thing. This place will probably be a little bit better in terms of protecting yourselves and watching the inmates.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the bumpy road to get to this new facility from its inception. So final tab, what did this facility cost us taxpayers?
Well, the cost has been revised over and over again. When I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, it was $182 million. I just talked with the Department of Corrections here a couple days ago, and they said they re-revised the cost, and it's now $175 million. That's the good figure to go
with. Oh, got revised down.
That's exactly right. but it's been all over the place. The original estimate was about $131 million, and then the legislature ended up adding some additional costs for furniture and fixtures and heavy equipment and a number of other things. And the current cost is about $175 million. But there had been a lot of controversy about this project. It was originally awarded during the Culver administration as a project labor agreement with a lot of union involvement. And one of the big deals about this was that it was, you know, this was back at the time when the economy was really in trouble, and it was that one of the ideas there was that it was going to provide a lot of jobs for Iowans. But as it turned out, the project ended up being awarded to a company based in Chicago, and only about 53% of the work was actually done by Iowa workers. There was a lot of people coming in from Illinois, Missouri, other states doing work, and that's another thing that became pretty controversial.
And I know you've written about this. This contractor in Chicago wanted many more millions of dollars at a certain point.
That's correct. And the state did end up resolving that. I believe that the state's executive branch authorized an additional $7 million. And this company, Walsh Construction, they did lay out a very detailed case and about why they should be paid more money, and that many things had changed as the project went along and were revised.
So when we think about this whole process, we have some closure here, the new facility mm-hmm. opening. What lessons do you think we can take away from the building and the transition to the new facility now?
As you look at this kind of thing, hindsight is always easier than foresight. But there really was a lot of thought and planning that went into this. There was a great deal of study, and they went around and talked with people all over the state and talked with correctional mm-hmm. people, talked with legislators. Many people sought a lot of input. So it's not like there wasn't a lot of thought that went into it. It was just that I think a lot of things came up that they just didn't anticipate, and there's still the potential for litigation on some of these construction issues, things that they just didn't anticipate. As you're probably aware, John Baldwin, the former corrections director, he said, he was involved in these projects for 30 years, and this one wasn't really done any different than the other ones. It just turned out they ran into a lot of things that they just didn't anticipate.
Bill, we have to go in just a moment, but before we do, tell us, what will happen with the old prison now?
Well, the old prison, there's a lot of discussions about what will happen to it, but we just asked Governor Branstad about that about a week ago, and he said, they're going to talk with people from the city of Fort Madison, Chamber of Commerce, that type of thing, look at the best way to do it. I know that there's talks about having bed and breakfast there, overnight stays. We've heard paranormal groups think that the place may be inhabited by ghosts. Of course, there are a number of people who were hung there in the gallows there. And another option is to lease it for movie productions.
Wow. Okay. I feel like I want to talk to you for another half hour, but we don't have the time. Bill, we'll check back in. Always very up to date. Lots of history and knowledge about our corrections system here in Iowa. Bill Petrosky, public affairs reporter for the Des Moines Register. Thanks for this conversation.
Good talking with you.
In just a moment, after a short break, we'll listen back to some highlights from my day-long visit to the old penitentiary from 3 years ago. And here's a little taste of what's to come. Rich Barlow, correctional counselor at the Iowa State Penitentiary, was, I believe, years ago on his second day at work when he was taken hostage after a prison riot.
A group of inmates then came to the basement and overtook us in our training room and held us hostage for approximately 10 hours during the course of the riot that day.
We'll hear more from Rich Barlow and that prison riot when we come back. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we've been learning in our first half hour about the new Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison. All of the more than 500 offenders were transferred to the new facility on August 1st. This half hour, we're going back to listen to some highlights from my tour of the old Fort Madison Penitentiary back in 2012. And here's a portion of my tour where I spoke with Rich Barlow, a correctional officer at the facility, a counselor for more than 30 years, and an official historian, as well as Warden Nick Ludwig. We started with a tour of Cell House 217. That was in use for much of the time Rich Barlow worked at the penitentiary.
It used to be housed our highest level offenders. They called them honor lifers, and after they closed the cell house down in the mid-90s, they were moved to another unit. It also housed the general population offenders, and those are the individuals that are able to get out, work, participate in irregular activities. Again, it was closed down in the mid-90s because of unsafe conditions.
What changes have taken place since you started in 1980s?
I think it would be easier to say what hasn't changed, and basically the only thing that has not changed here is the stone walls that surround the place. The physical layout has done a complete metamorphosis, you might say. At any one time, you might have 400 or 500 offenders out at the same time. Now we're more of a unitization facility. We are the living units are broken down into individual units, and so there's a greater amount of control by the staff over the movements of the individuals, and so it gives us a greater amount of security here now.
We're standing here in Cell House 217 in a corridor, Rich, a lot of activity around us, people passing through, offenders, inmates passing through. What can you tell us about these people?
Those are the individuals at the clinical care unit. They're coming back in from their recreation time. Generally, the people that are assigned to that unit have mental health diagnosis, and they require some special supervision for them to be allowed to operate in a general population in their facility.
Mm-hmm. Now, you deal with a variety of problems, problems that the inmates, the offenders, have here. What are the toughest problems that you have to face?
A lot of it depends on the individual, how much time they've done. Obviously, individuals coming in on, say, a new life sentence have some adjustment issues. The reality hasn't really set in to those people yet as to they're going to be spending the rest of their lives in prison. And so there are certain issues, you know, relevant to those type of individuals.
How do you, on that point, how do you get someone to accept life in prison, which who knows how a person can even do that?
Again, we're available, you know, for daily consultations if they need it. A lot of them don't. A lot of them like to adjust by just sitting back and observing, seeing what's going on, how to acclimate themselves to the environment. Others need more hands-on. You need to talk to them. Help them work through their problems, or, you know, the loss of family, loss of wives or children, not being there on a day-to-day basis to see them, their children raised, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you get cases of deep depression, even suicidal thoughts.
Yes, we do. Fortunately, we have a number of very qualified psychologists on board, and so we can refer them to professionals.
Mm-hmm. You, Rich Barlow, in 1981, there was a riot here, widely publicized, though many years ago, still remembered in the state. You were actually taken hostage during that riot period. Can you take us through that day and what happened to you specifically?
Well, briefly, I'd only been here for 4 days as an employee, and we were going through orientation. And we had 8 members in my orientation class. They called us trainees at that time. And basically, our training at that time was in the administration building in the basement. And as we broke for lunch during the time, there was an alarm in the kitchen, which means there's an emergency, and people and staff respond to that. Well, since we were new employees, we would not be involved in that. And so we remained in the basement, and our training officer went to assist the staff in handling the emergency. As it turned out, a group of inmates then came to the basement and overtook us in our training room and held us hostage for approximately 10 hours during the course of the riot that day.
What do you remember most about that hostage situation?
Oh, it was terrifying. We were threatened with weapons. The inmates had homemade shotguns. They had knives. They had hammers. We were threatened to have our fingers cut off. We were threatened to be lined up in front of the offenders involved, and we had our lives threatened. We were robbed. We were stripped and forced to put on inmate clothes during that day. The most terrifying was obviously the early parts of the problem, the riot situation. As the day went on, things tended to kind of mellow out a bit.
I imagine that's a day that haunted you for many years and perhaps to this day.
It's a day certainly I remember with great detail. I make it a habit of, I'm also the counselor that does the new employee orientation on hostage situations, and so we made a training film about that day, and we had several other riot situations in the 80s that mm-hmm. Staff got together, and we made a training film, you know, detailing our situation that happened during the course of those events to new employees so they get an idea of the possibilities of what could happen in this environment.
Okay, here we're in the historic part, most historic part of the state penitentiary, Cell House 217, with Rich Barlow, corrections counselor, and with Warden Nick Ludwig with us. And so we're not quite in to the facility yet. We're not on the inside, so to speak, yet, Warden.
We're one doorway away.
Okay.
Cap, how are you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We've just entered the inside of Iowa State Penitentiary. Straight ahead of us, it's called Building 51. And Building 51 is the building where our administrative staff, to include the deputy warden, associate warden of security, associate warden of program treatment, the individual who just walked by us, Mr. Gager, is our administrative law judge. Their offices are located in Building 51. Downstairs, we have a program area that includes our chapel and our self-help groups.
Okay, so here's where we see, I mean, we're standing out here and we see the facade of the oldest part of the building right behind us, Warden. And these stones, I'm going to presume, will date back to the 19th century. And then in front of us, different other structures that it looks like Fort Madison was built on at various periods. So this is the original structure, and then we had other ones dating back to maybe the early 20th century or the mid-20th century. And so it's really been built on. And maybe, Rich, you know more about that.
Yeah, this was the original site of the prison that was built in 1839. And as they expanded, the cell house row, which is to our right over here, was added on. I'm not sure the approximate date of that. And then the other buildings were built after that over the period of decades and actually centuries.
Some of those were built in like 1920s. And much of the work was performed by offender labor and or with offender labor.
Mm-hmm. And so the watchtower that we're looking at, is that still active? Or
yes.
Okay.
As is the tower directly above us. And the tower you'll see. As we make rounds, it will not be uncommon for you to see staff to step out. And they normally do it just to let you know that they're there, they're on duty, and in many instances just a show of respect, the fact that we're out and about within the facility.
To step out. Tell me what you mean by that.
Physically step out of the enclosure and step out onto a landing area. Case in point, that tower that we're looking at. If we walk around the kitchen area, around the yard, and come back, would not be uncommon to see that officer step out and wave.
Okay, so that you know everything's well, they're alert, and they're just you're just acknowledging each other. Okay.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, how you doing?
What's happening?
Warden, as we turn the corner here, we really see a quite impressive facade that something of like this could be seen in Europe, you would think. Well,
yes,
what is this facade we're looking at now, this inner courtyard?
This is referred to as Cell House Row, and this comprises the entire maximum security component of our facility. In particular, what you're seeing here is you're seeing the area of the institution that houses our general population, maximum security offenders, as well as our offenders who are housed in Cell House 319, which is our segregation unit.
The segregation unit is at the highest security?
In most instances, the individuals in segregation, we have concerns about their management that would preclude their continued placement in general population. Case in point, they may be fighting, they may be involved in gang activity, they could be escape risks, they could require protection, they may need to be separated physically from other offenders.
Does that mean, does segregation mean isolation?
Segregation is akin to isolation. A segregation unit is a unit that needs to be monitored as closely as any other unit within an institution due to the fact that you have individuals confined for longer terms of incarceration. Case in point, those modules you see at the far end of the facility are exercise modules for offenders housed in segregation, where they're entitled to an hour of exercise that is in those modules as opposed to walking out on the yard. And again, you see an individual being escorted by two officers, which again is a requirement of a segregated individual.
Tell us, we're looking at, well, it's a sunlit yard right now with barbed wire around it, fencing and barbed wire around the top here, but a lot of activity there by inmates. Tell us the various things that are going on right now.
You have individuals that are exercising by walking the track around the yard. Some are shooting baskets. I don't see any on the handball court at present. There may be some on the far end playing catch with a softball, and the weight pit is, of course, a very, very active area of the institution during recreation time.
Mm-hmm. And with a new facility being built at this moment, are we far enough in the plans, or can you sort of paint us a picture of how the yard, the exercise yard, will be different in the new facility?
the exercise yard from an aerial view would look similar in that we will have a softball field. Offenders will have the ability to lift weights, to exercise. There will be more similarities than differences. One of the primary differences will be the view. The view here is the sky. The view there will be a horizon. We will have a double-fenced facility as opposed to a walled facility. And again, that's not uncommon with modern builds, modern architecture of correctional institutions.
What difference does that make?
One of my concerns, and one of many administrators' concerns, is always individuals' propensity to escape or even think about escaping. Well, case in point, this is a real formidable obstacle, if you will, taking a look at our walls.
Is that about, what, a 20-foot wall at least?
These are 40, I believe.
40-foot walls, okay.
And when you go to a modern build, one of the primary differences will be the view, as we mentioned, that these individuals will have, and that will be to see the horizon. So from a management perspective, we need to be mindful of the fact that when a guy gets a Dear John letter, when a guy has a bad day, when an individual maybe loses his classification level and loses some privileges that he would be afforded at higher levels, how does he react to that? How does he respond to that? We have many measures in place to prevent escape, not only here but throughout the agency, but it is never far from our minds. And again, when you have a view of the horizon, I would think, I would be wrong if I did not have a heightened sense of awareness, nor my staff, of individuals taking a look at that and wondering if that didn't present a new opportunity.
So we're moving into another fenced area here outside. Right in front of us is the weight pit here. So we see bench presses. A lot of these are all free weights.
Correct.
None of the fancy weights, but we see maybe 20 men, 20 inmates lifting weights here. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on here.
What you see is you see different ethnic groups working out together. You see a very orderly, respectfully used weight pit. This is a privilege. This is part of our incentive level. Many of our guys are very devoted to weightlifting in general, and with the variety of stations that we have here, they can get a full body workout. This is one of those age-old debates in institutions. You know, are you allowing them to get bigger than your staff? Are you allowing them to become stronger and this and that? And again, that goes back to our ability to restrict this if it's used inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys are, you see, it's spotless, it's meticulous, it's very orderly, and it should be.
When we see any number of Hollywood films, and I'm sure you're acquainted with many of them, I'm trying to see where you see misconceptions, particularly in a weight yard like this, a weight pit, where often Hollywood likes to set a scene. How does that contrast to what we see on the big screen with what we see right here?
This is many don't do or provide an accurate portrayal of prison life. Shawshank Redemption, the conversations on the yard, the way guys kind of figured out a way to, whether they were trying to circumvent the system or whether they were talking about staff or whether they were talking about, you know, what movie was on that night, that is all stuff that you're seeing in front of you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Used appropriately, again, individuals have the opportunity to talk to guys that may be way at the other end of the cell house that they can't see when they're back in the cell house. They have the opportunity to talk about sports, similar concerns that people would have and conversations that people may have in society. Some of the guys are talking about educational programs. Some of them are helping others write letters, understand the language. When guys come to a facility, imagine being told life sentence. That certainly does not minimize what they did to earn that life sentence in any way. But how do you deal with that? How do you manage that mentally? How do you factor in, this is home for me now? You heard me use the term community previously. Learning how to jail the younger facilities, this is, as we've already discussed as well, this is an older, settled institution. I have guys that have been here 40 and 50 years at this place. I also have individuals who have just come from the classification center in Oakdale, our reception center. Those are the guys that are still, for all intents and purposes, learning how to jail, learning how to get into this process of, this is where I'm going to be for a set period of time.
If you've just joined us, this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're listening back to some highlights from my tour of the old Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison. That was back in 2012. About two-thirds of the offenders at the Iowa State Penitentiary are serving life sentences, most convicted murderers. Iowa no longer has a death penalty, but when it did, many of the executions were carried out in the Fort Madison prison. Rich Barlow took me to a place in the courtyard to look down on the former site of death row and a rectangular patch of grass where the gallows once stood and where hangings took place.
As you see, the barbed wire, there used to be a small cell house located close to the wall down below in what they call the lower yard. And the gallows stood outside. I never personally witnessed an execution or saw the gallows. They were all gone by the time I started here. But the unit itself was a maximum security unit where the offenders were held until their day of execution.
If I'm remembering correctly, the last execution in Iowa was in the early 1960s.
Yes.
And the method of execution was hanging.
Yes. The last prisoner executed was named Victor Fueger. He was actually a federal offender, and he was executed here.
Was that cell house here when you started in the 1970s?
Yes, it was. Matter of fact, it was here until just about 2006 when it was torn down.
Why was it torn down after all that time?
We had an escape of two offenders in November of 2005, and part of the way they were able to get out was climbing on top of that building and throwing a grappling hook over the wall and then over the wall and down the other side.
The two felons who escaped were 34-year-old Martin Moon and 27-year-old Joseph Legendre. On Monday, November 14, 2005, they escaped at around 7 in the evening. They were reported missing just before 9 p.m. Both worked at the prison industries. That's how they were reportedly able to get materials to fashion the homemade grappling hook. 3 days later, Martin Moon was captured in southern Illinois. He was found sleeping near a prison in a stolen car. When police ran the plates, Moon sped off, hit a tree, and bolted into the woods. Police officers gave chase, caught him, and returned him to Iowa. 4 days after the escape, the other fugitive, Robert Legendre, was captured without incident. He was found at a truck stop in southeast Missouri. Then-Governor Tom Vilsack removed Warden Ken Berger from his post. 7 prison employees were disciplined. Local lawmakers said the escape occurred in part because budget cuts forced guard towers to be left unmanned. But others argued with that, saying the prison had been given more funding and that prison guards were relying too much on an electronic escape wire, a wire which malfunctioned. Earlier in the program, we heard current Warden Ludwig talk about one of his concerns being prisoners escaping or even thinking about escaping. Although Warden Ludwig was not on the job during the escape in 2005, it's clear the way he runs the prison today remains influenced by that escape.
What it does is it makes you revisit your entire best practices, your operating procedures. Every facility develops operating procedures that are directed by policy directive. And the operating procedures also dictate, case in point, your movement plan throughout the institution, program availability for offenders, staffing. Staffing, of course, was one of the primary changes. We have more towers staffed than other institutions, and that is still as a result of that escape. Mm-hmm. The new facilities certainly wouldn't have this many towers built into the architecture, built into the design. Many new facilities do not even have towers. They, in place of towers, they'll utilize technologies, whether it's non-lethal stun fences or perimeter vehicles or all of the above, a dual perimeter fence, out-of-bound areas for individuals, something as simple as signs off-limits, and then routine staff rounds, routine shakedowns. Every facility has its own unique concerns, despite how well it's constructed, despite how well it's staffed. We're remiss if we don't practice those best practices on a routine basis to ensure that we can protect the public, we can provide a safe and humane living environment for staff and offenders, and that we can fulfill the agency's mission.
A few highlights from my visit to the old Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison back in 2012 to mark the opening of the new prison August 1st of this year. If you'd like to listen to this entire hour online or download it, simply go to iowapublicradio.org, or you can also see photos of both the old and new penitentiary by going to iowapublicradio.org and searching for River to River. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.